Hello and welcome to the Evolve Pipedrive podcast, where we talk all things sales, Pipedrive apps and the Pipedrive marketplace. My name is Bruce Bignall. I'm the sales director here at Evolve, and in this episode I'll be continuing my sales series talking about prospecting. Now, our audience is predominantly on Pipedrive and looking to get more from their system, while others are considering the CRM switch. Now, I think either of those people are going to find this episode really useful. If you've got a sales process that involves qualification from a junior salesperson or an SDR or BDR, all the way to handling over to an account exec or a senior sales member. My guest today finds this topic as fascinating as I do and has excelled in an environment of top performing salespeople. So, and when I say that, I really mean that. It's because when I was looking on his LinkedIn profile, I noticed that he was a top performing salesperson for two consecutive years when he started his last role. Now, when I say that, you're going to hear a lot about his business, and for him to be that person in that company, in that environment, I think says a lot about him. With that being said, it's my great pleasure to be joined by John Knight, the sales director at Engage IQ, a prospecting platform focused on getting sales teams in contact with receptive decision makers and buyers. He was also the sales director at Engage IQ's parent company, Engage Tech, which offers outsourced SDRs and sales training. John, thank you for joining me. Please introduce yourself. Give me a little bit of your backstory and our listeners some of your backstory and your industry experience and how you came to be the sales director at Engage IQ.
Cool. Thanks, Bruce. Really kind words. I appreciate it. So start with the business Engage Tech. You gave a pretty good overview of us. We've been around for about 11 years now. Just coming up to 12. Everything we do is around helping B2B tech companies to build and grow their new business pipeline. So we work specifically in the areas that I think a lot of people listening to this podcast will be working in and interested in. We do that through three different things. So it's, as you said, outsource SDR. We have a software platform, Engage IQ, and we also have a consultancy offering. So hopefully some of the things we'll talk about today are bedded in some pretty good experience, because we've been working with some of the world's biggest and fastest growing tech companies to help them grow their pipeline. I've maybe bucked the trend of some people, like my kind of age or demographic, and I joined Engage Tech straight out of university and have been with here about nine and a half years now. So obviously really proud of what we've achieved over that time. I joined when the business was 8 people or so, one small office in South London-ish, and over that time we're now 110 people, give or take. We've got offices across London, Edinburgh, Stockholm and Sydney, and obviously we've evolved our offerings as well. Started out as an SDR prospecting for 2 years on behalf of the tech companies that I mentioned earlier. Then moved into like account management and individual contributor new business role, and then eventually was the sales director for the core business, managing the team there. And then we launched Engage IQ in 2019, and I was one of the first people to do that, and then kind of led everything at that point, whilst the team was incredibly small. And as we kind of grow, you know, right down to the kind of early product development and marketing, not myself obviously, but working with the people that did. And then over the last 18 months, I've been just purely focusing on the new business for Engage IQ. So yeah, it's been an interesting ride, and I'd say been here 9.5 years, but seen a lot of change in that time, and fortunate to have a lot of experience in different areas and different types of kind of prospecting and pipeline generation for the companies as well.
It's really cool, and that's actually how we got in touch, right, with Engage IQ. We actually met at another technology vendor's event. That's great. And I think it hopefully that we can put up on a lot of those pieces from the, you know, to your point, the individual contributor role to from the manager role, and how to think about this topic of prospecting, right? So on this podcast, we talk to people that integrate with Pipedrive. We talk to sales leaders about sales methodologies. So we spoke about Bantam Medic, which is like a qualification methodology. We spoke about ideal customer profiles, the art of qualifying. But this is a really interesting topic, right? So this becomes you actually might do your ideal customer profiles piece first, right? But at the beginning of all of this, prospecting, right? How do you define prospecting, and how yeah, maybe industry, but how does John think about prospecting and how would you define it?
I think how I think about it is one of, if not the most important parts of the sales process. Mm. And I don't think it's much of a like secret or kind of gem of information that the most successful salespeople are prospecting all the time. I think even at like an enterprise salesperson level, the ratios that you should be aiming for is about 30% of your own opportunity generation.
Yeah.
The reason why I find it so important is because I don't know if have you ever read the book Shift by Tibor Shanto?
No.
Cool. That's funny. It's an interesting book. One of the things it talks about in it is triggers. So when you can look at, let's say, the last 30 deals that your business has done and identify specific triggers. So, you know, Series A funding, for example, might be quite a common one. When we did that work in our business and our new business team to look at the triggers and why people have bought for us, we found a specific trigger in the like 25% of the group of customers we looked at had openly said that they were engaging with us and actually ended up working with us because of the first prospecting experience and because of how personalized or professional they found that. And that made them feel like we were an organization that knew what they were talking about. And actually we're selling to salespeople, right? So it becomes even more important. But that first touch point is first impression, one of the most important parts of sales process.
So that's just to touch on that, right? Because that's a really, and any books that kind of come up here, we'll try to capture that and put them in at the end. But that, you said 25 to 30% of people at the end of the process have said, one of the reasons we chose you is because of such a strong first impression. When you learn that, and the reason I want to push down this route, when you know that, so you double down on that, right? But the other book, Thinking Fast and Thinking Slow by
Kahneman
and his partner at the time, I can't remember his name, but the idea of peak end rule, peak end experience. So what you remember is your peak emotive experience and your end experience. So it'd be interesting to know that if the peak experience is actually one of the beginning ones, how do you manage that throughout by the end? If you had a sour experience at the end, how is that managed throughout that sales process? Because if they have a really great intro call, then the handover is poor.
Yeah.
It won't.
Yeah, yeah. That the process has to be polished, professional, however you want to look at it from start to finish. Because you're absolutely right. And I'm sure there has been cases of this. You know, I've seen them in other organisations where you have a great prospecting experience, and then you hand over to the SDR, hands over to the AE, and they don't. So even it can be outrageous. They don't turn up to the call, or they don't turn up.
Yeah.
To the meeting, and like it's gone at that point, isn't it? Yeah. So yeah, I think in most organisations, if the overall sales training and methodology is right and the people are acting in a human way, then I think you can pretty much maintain that good impact. And the outcome of the second call might still be we've qualified out for whatever reason. But
yes,
as you've probably found yourself, you qualify with that person, they have a good experience, they move on to somewhere else.
Yeah.
It qualifies in again. But yeah, you're absolutely right that first point is key, but because there's not a full relationship, it can be can be lost pretty quickly as well.
Mm. So who's responsible for that? Is that, you mentioned process there about having the sales process right. Who is this down to individual great salespeople, SDRs like you might have been at that time, or did you have a great framework around that? How should that be led?
Are you referring to like the prospecting or the
now back to prospect? I really want to knuckle down on this prospecting piece.
Yeah, absolutely led. You tend to find that most people that are prospecting full time are early on in their career. On average, look at SDRs when they start their career, they're post university or they've had a couple of jobs, but it's probably their entry point into sales. So naturally, they need a great framework around them. They need the right coaching, they need the right mentorship at that age, because I was there myself. You're actually going through some quite big changes in your life as well as just as well as just in your career, and it's your first job. You don't always necessarily know how to act in the workplace. You need the right people around you, and the businesses that we see that really struggle with this perhaps only have one person in a room that's prospecting and no one that's ever done the role before. So they need the right structure around them to help them. But then the people that excel are the ones that have a real growth mindset. They take in a lot of external resources and they start to put their own spin on things over time. But they also understand that it takes a little bit of time to get there. They have the patience to work out what works. So a very political answer, but it is a combination of the two. But the structure at first, you know, we hire about 17 SDRs a quarter as an example, and we know we need to put them through that structure initially to make sure that they're effective in their jobs. And then once they get ramped up and they've learned how to do the basics, they can start to take on a bit more ownership of their own careers at that point.
Yeah, no, that's huge, isn't it? So there's a so it can be taught. so it can be taught. So how do you approach prospecting, like, and do you still have to do it? You mentioned it's usually people earlier in their career, but are you still doing it as a sales director now?
Yeah, 100%. So my role is like an individual contributing director within the business. What I was talking about earlier is the people that's their sole responsibility. So they maybe have like a meeting booking target or something. But yeah, my opinion on this is that everyone right up until a senior salesperson, enterprise salesperson should be prospecting themselves, should be generating opportunities for themselves. I think they perhaps have different approaches or different ways to do it, because let's say you're an enterprise salesperson that's managing a 12-month deal cycle. Realistically, with all the work that has to go on around that and all the different relationships you need to build, you're not going to be able to spend 20 hours a week making X amount of 100 cold calls and cold emails. So you have to be smarter with how you do it. So I think the way that you can do it has to evolve, but realistically, for anyone to be effective at it, it's all about consistency. It's all about the amount of time you put in, and people that put in half an hour a day to do it generally won't get consistent results. People that put in a couple of hours a day or a couple of hours every other day are the ones that will find those results.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? The kind of the muscle, you know, you have to, for me, it's always like, can I make 10 outbound calls a day? Like, and if you're doing that daily, and that's when I'm at my busiest, can I still do that? Right. That's the hardest thing sometimes, but, yeah.
Yeah. If you look at it just from calling, if you just take, and obviously there's loads of different channels that we would advocate, but if you just take calling right now, on average in the UK, it takes 20 calls just for one person to pick up the phone.
Mm.
So,
and when you say pick up, that's actually getting through to the right person.
You calling like a direct line, or the reception coming through to the right person. That doesn't mean you then have a really great conversation. Five of them might say, look, I can't speak now, I'm busy.
Yeah. But
if you just think about those numbers alone, you need to be doing it for a few hours. You need to be doing it over a period of time to actually get anywhere. There's some cool things out there. Obviously, EngageIQ is one thing. There's also things like auto dialers that help you make a number of calls at any given time. Yeah. But fundamentally, it's about repeatable, consistent work in that area, whether that is calls, emails, whatever.
Yeah, nice. So when do we hand this over, right? So what makes a good prospecting call? Obviously, this is going to be different per business in terms of what they require. So you mentioned about the meetings booked, like an MQL to like a lead when they become like a sales qualified lead. So we've captured all the information we can. They're now ready to buy this quarter, i.e. go give them the demo and close it, right? When should that handover happen? And should the SDR be involved in that call? Like, what should it be transparent that actually I'm now handing you over to my sales technical lead, or how do you think that is the best place to work?
Yeah, I don't think it's the SDR's responsibility to find someone with a budget that's ready to buy, because I think certainly what I've seen, I've been 10 years and 9.5, whatever, I know that's half of what some people are doing, but certainly what I've seen over that time is that by the time you find someone with a budget or ready to buy, or even kind of halfway down that process, you're probably too late. The way people that buy and engage with information now has changed massively.
Yeah.
Internet information availability, all those kinds of things. So the SDR's job, to my mind, or the salesperson that's prospecting's job, to use that example, is to find someone with a problem that is compelling enough for them to want to solve it.
Yeah.
And then they're open to a second conversation about that and a more structured conversation.
Yeah.
Now, you could probably do a whole podcast on should that second call be a demo or a discovery? And I think a lot of that comes down to like what the product is and various different things. But that, whatever that first point is, for me, that's the point that the AE, whoever, BDM, whatever that role is, that's the person they take over.
Yeah.
Something that I've found really useful is I will send a video to the person that's been booked before the meeting. So I'll just send them a video, perhaps with their website up or our website, just using something like Vidyard, so I'm just in the corner.
Yeah.
And just say, look, I'm John, this is what we do, this is what we want to speak to you about, and I'll be on the call tomorrow alongside. So, that's how I personally kind of manage that transition of the person jumping on the call and knowing that.
Yeah.
I think if you think about the buying experience, it's so important for that person to understand what's going on and where the roles lie, because there's nothing worse than them having a really great conversation with someone and really getting on with someone, and then that person not being on the call, or that person not explaining how the process works, because it just creates, you know, that trust and relationship is gone. So yeah, that handover is important and being done right. More often than not, from our side, if someone else is booking the meeting for me, they'll be on the call. I think for someone in a prospecting role, that's a really important learning curve to go on to understand what happens on those calls. So targets, time permitting, that kind of thing. As a side note, it's really important that when they do sit on those calls, they actually almost try and engage in active listening and pick out what the AE might have missed, because it's so easy for someone to book a meeting and sit on the call with a salesperson and just zone out for an hour, and then it is a waste of time you bear off.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we it's a really good point in terms of if the AE is going through having a really great conversation, extracting loads of good information, showcasing the product, but that they might have missed something because in the user journey, that's so important for that person. So in my head, like when if I'm ever demoing Pipedrive as an example, I always think, like, you know, from lead in all the way through to the closure, and then I have that kind of checklist in my head. So has this question been asked? Even though we might actually be at some point talking about one of the latter stages, there is a checklist that I go through my head from kind of the lead in, lead source, all the way to the kind of insights out after a deal closed one. So, I think that's super, super important. Otherwise, you can get carried away there. So let's have a little talk about do's and don'ts, right? So if we're talking about prospecting, it's super, super important, maybe the most important piece in certainly the beginning of the sales process, right? Your experience, 25 to 30% of sales coming through Engage Tech, I guess that was. You found that, or
it was a pool of customers that we. So it was our last. It was 25% of that most recent pool that we'd bought on. So it wasn't all of our customers, although I'm sure they'd all say that they had an amazing experience in the prospecting. But yeah, it was that particular pool. But yeah,
we were able to identify. Yeah, so with it being so important, what would you say some of the basics are of prospecting?
Would you look at that from like how to be consistently effective, or just what should you do every time you reach out?
So I actually see this in like at least three layers, right? So you've got the what framework has the business put in place for the SDR to so are there scripts? Are there what is a successful outcome there versus the time that an individual person might be putting in. Mm-hmm. So I would look at it in a couple of ways.
Yeah, sure. I think when you're looking at it across an organization, particularly ones with bigger SDR teams, or even like four people in the team that are prospecting, regardless of if they're sales or SDRs, that sharing of information is one of the most important things. What we saw like really heavily in lockdown was that trends came in and went really quickly. So, for example, some businesses, not saying every business, but some businesses really struggled in the short term because they didn't have access to enough mobile numbers, direct dials, things like that. So whereas they might have been really heavy based on the phone before, they had to learn very quickly what worked over email. And one thing we did was realize that we needed to widen our approach. So we sent about 1,000 personalized emails. So manually did this, not through like a big post or anything like that. We did that through four people in the team over a period of time, but that sharing of information across that team was what meant that we could work that out really effectively, what actually was working, what wasn't, and then you start to work out which channels are dropping off as well. So using things like Slack, Teams to just say, look, here's a really good example of an email that I've just sent, and I've actually sent this 10 times and had 8 responses, or here's what I'm saying on my calls, it's working.
Yeah. That's really, so even in that environment where you might think it's super competitive, actually to enable the team to grow, sharing's the right, you don't necessarily want one guy that's just killing it, right? You kind of want, because that doesn't help. Certainly if you've got more than, if you have a team, you need to be sharing that. So how have you seen that work? Would you say Slack's a great example of, you know, what works, but would that be a in your weekly Friday sales call, would you say, hey, this, you know, 15 minutes worth of sharing, like how would you look to do that?
Yeah, good question. For us, the way we've seen it more successfully is just ad hoc, we'll set up channels on Slack. So we have a channel dedicated to LinkedIn prospecting, a channel dedicated to sales emails, a channel dedicated to voice notes, and people are just sharing them as they're seeing results. And so people can pick up on that. There's also some like great podcasts out there on this topic. There's loads. One I really like is 30 Minutes to President's Club. They talk quite a lot about prospecting, and the guys from there post some interesting stuff. So over time, you're just gathering all that information. I think there's a pretty good community now around SDRs, particularly over the last couple of years.
SDRs is rocketing, right? So I was lucky enough to be part of the Sales Hacker when they kind of launched probably 2 or 3 years ago. It was kind of Sam Jacobs and that kind of I think that was just a Sales Hacker podcast. And as that kind of community grew up, and the call out SDR rock stars, you know, and basically elevating the role a bit. Like for the longest time, it was seen as a no one wants to do it, or it's just unsexy because you're not closing the sale. However, I think. It's basically elevating the role. To your point, it is one of the most important parts of the sale. You're the first sharp end of the sales process. You might have all this marketing going on around, kind of attention grabbing, but what that's trying to do, if you have to have most of the time you have to have a conversation with someone to make a sale, unless it's a self-serve, then there's no phone call needed. But a lot of the times you do actually have to speak to someone before that any sales courses. That's super, super important. Yeah. How do you then excel? What differs if you've got the scripts, if you've got the process in place, what are the attributes to have someone excel?
I think like as a characteristic or an attribute, coachability and implementing that feedback quickly. I think the best SDRs that I've seen and worked with are the ones that have gone out and just found new ideas and new information themselves, and they've not been afraid to try something 20 times and get it wrong. But the patience to know that they need to try things enough times to get like a data point around it. So coachability, patience, there's all kinds of, you know, you need to have that, the typical attributes of a top four in terms of ability, but I think those two things for me stand out as attributes. And then they're just making stuff happen. There's a lot, you can find a lot of excuses in the sales world in general. In SDR, sometimes that could be like data, structuring of the day, things like that. But just making things happen or looking for reasons or solutions when they don't is key, rather than just waiting for someone to solve that for you. And I think that's the difference between like a framework around someone and then being able to use the framework to their advantage.
Yeah, so I just want to pick on that last. So if you don't know the answer, looking to say that last piece again.
So if you don't know the answer, looking at why and being able to critically analyze what you're doing in that and try and find solutions. And then if you can't find the solution, taking that to someone and saying, I've tried these 10 things, here's the 3 things I've thought of, what do you think? There's our commercial director in our business, Callum, he often says to many people, myself included, that most people are smart enough that if they sit down and give something 15 minutes to half an hour's thought, they'll come to a reasonable outcome. What happens most of the time, and I've definitely been guilty of this and I'm sure others have, is you think of things and then you think, oh, I can't do that, and then you don't actually stop and give it enough time to
give it a go.
Exactly, and just think about it properly.
I like that. So if those are the do's, What should people be avoiding when prospecting? I've got some ideas, but
what do you think?
So I would say, cause the only reason I say that and jumped in there because I didn't know it looked like you didn't know what you wanted to say. But I would say spending too long on the phone. If it's not going where you need it to go, understand that. Now you might disagree here, but I think, for example, I've heard of people saying, "Oh, talk time needs to be X number of minutes per day, or whatever it might be," and I don't think it's a great measure of output. So if you're measuring how long you're talking, that's not the best measure to kind of make sure you're getting the next call.
Yeah, I think what you're talking about is, you know, like the KPIs around talk time or number of dials, things like that. You know, like you said, spending too long trying to find an answer. I think one thing we talk about a lot is when you're cold calling or cold email, like looking for a no is not a bad thing. People have a tendency to try and qualify people in and find a yes.
Yes.
But actually, if someone's not a fit, that's not a problem.
Yeah.
It's just about, okay, understanding they're definitely not a fit. Obviously, not necessarily taking the first no, but doing that. So that's a big one for me. I think focusing on the person rather than the account is massive. That's as simple at the start as...
Say that again. So focusing on the person that you're on the phone with.
Or just in general. So let's say you have the MD of an organization, like another types of people you target for us, marketing, sales, ahead of one of those roles or MDs. You find that person and you only prospect into them, and then you're reliant on them throughout the process. And that then comes out in a few different ways. So if you're building out a list and sourcing and growing your list all the time, you're going to find 3 to 5 people per company. If the organizations are big enough, you're widening the net of people that you can contact. Also, if you're the salesperson picking up the opportunity, just because you've got a meeting with the head of sales in our case, doesn't mean that you can't then reach out to perhaps the head of marketing and get the SDR to continue to prospect. And you'll probably get to an answer quicker in that account.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good. And there's a very good point, certainly from like the some of my experience in like enterprise sales. You can't just have that one person that's going to be making that decision. I actually spoke to a really interesting chap who's built a account mapping tool that plugs into Pipedrive called Visrm. Okay. V-I-Z-R-M, visual relationship mapping, I think he called it. But we've recorded the podcast, so that should be live soon. So it's quite a cool tool that plugs into Pipedrive for that exact purpose, what you're saying, right? So you've got your deal organization, who are the contacts that we spoke to, how do we get around here? So that was a cool tool. Bad habits that you've seen and what people can do about those. So we've kind of touched upon the framework, making enough calls. But what bad habits would you see in prospecting?
I think an over-reliance on one channel. So only focusing on calling or only focusing on emails. That's a big one. I think spending too long trying to personalize things. So let's say, for example, you are spending 15 minutes trying to find something on someone's Twitter, then that's a bad habit.
Yeah.
And then what was on top of that? I think measuring yourself and your channels over a short period of time and perhaps like anomalous results. You make 10 calls and no one picks up, so you stop there. Or you send 20 emails and you book a meeting, so you only do that for the next week. Having a like a month or longer view of your metrics and your data. I think that's the most important part of it for me. What do you think on that?
Yeah, I think the that's a really good point about over personalizing, right? I think that's a really good point, because certainly in the early days you would spend too much time to find exact and get that first opening right to personalize to them, because you think that might be the best way. You can talk about that later on in the process, which makes it, have the, or it might come out in the conversation, but I don't think it is certainly not required in that first outreach. It should, it shouldn't be the wrong targeted. So what I mean by that is, if you say, oh, we speak to people in the construction industry, but actually they're in finance, or there's that, because that's sometimes a danger, right? I think I'd have to agree with that, actually.
I think my thinking on that is, like, honestly, I think that should be a given that you're getting the industry right and so on, because that takes like 30 seconds.
Well, yeah.
You know, some of the really good example emails here, we've got people that have made emails based around someone that they found out is a funky house DJ in their spare time. And they've put together like very personalized emails around that. Those generally are really effective, but that information isn't there for everyone. And so if you can't find that, you can't spend 20 minutes trying to do it, because then you only send 5 emails and make 20 calls and everything.
Yeah. It's a very cool. If where I do check is that the first above the line on their LinkedIn, if they said if they're putting something personal in there about them, they probably, it's part of their character, so they probably mean it means a lot to them, right? So but I'm not going to search too deep. That's cool. So As a high performing salesperson, what tools, tips, tricks, self talk or mantra do you use or go back to? Or you said before about being coachable and patient, and you've mentioned a couple of books or podcasts yourself. So you're obviously someone that is continuing to learn. Any examples that the listeners might like? Yeah.
Yeah, I think. Some of those books and podcasts mentioned earlier, so Shift, that's probably more of a sales book, 30 Minutes Presence Club. There's a book, I've not actually read it, I must confess, but that a lot of people here like, called Fanatical Prospecting, that I've heard really good things about. For me, the top tools, obviously Engage IQ, of course. Outside of that, I think Vidyard is a great tool that people aren't leveraging enough. I think LinkedIn Voice Notes is a really powerful channel that actually probably 30% of people I speak to don't even know about. So there's an opportunity there. Go on a little better.
I was just going to say that I haven't used it, but I've seen more polls about should people use it with their LinkedIn voice notes, and I'm like, just give it a shot yourself. Like
Yeah, people are just trying to drive a bit of engagement there, aren't they?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, definitely. Like the amount of voice notes that that we send, and certainly I send, and people say, oh, I've never actually received one of these before, or I didn't even know how you could do this. That's really important.
Yeah,
Lush is another very good tool, and I think, as I said before, just sharing that information between you is the key to working out quicker what's actually working and what's not.
Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah, I think it's a really good introduction to kind of how you think about prospecting. So appreciate that. Anything else you'd like to cover before we go today? In terms of, like, you know, best way to keep in touch with you or engage and things like this?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I think anyone that is looking at ways to improve their prospecting, looking at how they can get in touch with more decision makers, get in touch with us. We've got a few different ways that we're helping all kinds of organizations that I spoke about at the start. But ultimately, the people that we're working with, they're typically struggling to build enough new business pipeline. And that's why they come to work with us. Reach out to myself on LinkedIn. Quite a few of our team are posting very regular content about this stuff as well. Steph Drowders, Callum Henderson, Emma Leach, Ben Rowe, a few people within our business that are very regularly posting, and they will be sharing tips all the time. So if you just follow them, you should get some interesting information, and I'm sure any of them would also be happy to have a chat if people just wanted to speak about all things prospecting.
Yeah, send them a LinkedIn voice note, see what you get back.
Yeah, you'll get a good response if you do that, I'm sure.
Well, thank you very much, John. And that's it for this week. You'll find all of the links that we spoke about and a lot of the books that we chat about here in the show notes, and links all in the description. So thank you for listening to the Evolve Part Drive podcast, where we talk all things sales, apps, and the sales series. So if you have enjoyed this, please like, subscribe, or share with someone that you think will find it useful. Until next time, see you later. Cheers, John. Cheers,